Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Unlike a lot of radio and TV personalities, David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation, only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. And now, brace yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, here comes the unfiltered truth about money, investing, and retirement planning from a man who will give it to you straight. No bias and no spin. Here he is, David Holland.
Advice only available in those states where registered, and only if you hire David Holland and Holland Financial. That's a good thing. If you don't know what to do, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we do every day as we work with money. And working with money means that we're watching the stock market, we're watching the economic activity, and we are ready to talk to Scott Connor.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Our resident CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst. That's you,
right.
Man.
That's right.
Well, tell us about Thursday's trade.
Yeah, Thursday's trade ended up being a little uninspiring by the end of it. The Dow up 46 points at 12,460. S&P basically flat at 13,15. NASDAQ off a little bit at 13 to 28,31. Oil basically flat, still in that 84 range. Tens at 164, so we're still seeing a little bit of a bump in tens, certainly from where we were a week ago. And a big sell-off in gold on Thursday, because of Chairman Bernanke's comments, which I'll tell you about in a moment, down $42 to the ounce for the gold market at $1,591. So, most of the day throughout Thursday, we were significantly higher than that. Triple digits on the Dow, double digits on the S&P. It was kind of fun to watch. Everybody was participating. But just at the very end of the day, things started to sell off a little bit. And normally on Thursdays, I rush in and tell you all about the weekly jobless claims. It was very much a sidebar for Thursday's trade, but I'll give you the number anyway. 377,000. That's off 12,000, so not too bad. Heading in the right direction, but still, not really a particularly meaningful. When they change just a little bit from week to week, it doesn't matter.
And is this a number they're going to revise later, or is this
Certainly.
A good number?
Yeah, no. They revise all of them. None of them are good numbers, Dave. You know that.
Well, I should be more precise in my language. It's not where we need the job numbers to be, but are they reliable numbers? And I think you've already answered that.
Yeah, they're basically just many different shades of the gray that is flat for the jobs
372
market.
Shades of gray?
Yeah, that's exactly
372,000 shades
right.
of gray.
Two really major pieces of news in Thursday's market, though. Actually, one of them began on Wednesday night. Actually, both of them began on Wednesday night. First, everybody was looking to the Fed. Chairman Bernanke spoke in front of Congress on Thursday, and he said that, basically repeated his previous statements. We are prepared to take action if we need to. Right now, we don't need to. Europe is a big threat. And then he shook his finger at Congress and said, you people need to get the whole debt and tax situation. That's not my job. You people need to get that figured out. And they all said, yeah, we know.
I'll bet that's a lot of fun to speak in front of Congress.
It looks nerve-wracking.
He's talking to him, and they're probably making faces at him.
Well, I watched the testimony, and some of the questions that the elected officials ask are extremely insightful and well thought of. And
really?
Some of them are just
goofy.
Is that putting
it nicely? Goofy?
I guess folks are trying to get on TV, but they don't make much sense. That news from the Fed really started the night before, though, when Fed Vice Chair Janet Yellen came out and she said, hey, we have some pretty serious risks to this economy here, which really started the market thinking that there was going to be an increased aggressiveness of the language from Chairman Bernanke, although we didn't get that. But, they meet again in the middle of June, and if some of the doves are really pounding the table, it wouldn't surprise me to see some of that language change.
Well, so no QE3, no need to pump more money in the system right now. So that caused the gold to drop because gold was maybe going up a little bit in terms of expectation of possible...
Yeah, ahead of the QE trade.
And the reason for that is because the quantity, quote-unquote, quantity of gold out there is already kind of fixed,
right?
And you're changing the quantity of dollars by increasing the dollars in the system. So that makes the gold, that's what causes it to act the way it does.
Yep, and we also saw the dollar strengthen on the news that we were not getting QE. Generally speaking, it goes the other way when we think we are going to get QE. And then the other big news that came from overseas was from China. They surprised the markets with a quarter point interest rate cut on their central bank lending rate down to 6.31%. That's still, that's pretty high.
Yeah, so they're trying to bolster their economy.
They're trying to soften the slowing of the growth that they see in their economy. There's no question. And they have said, listen, Europe is by far our largest trade partner. We export more to Europe than anywhere else. And so we're really concerned about this potential recession that most of Europe is going to go into. They talked a lot in the news on Thursday about the interest rate cut. But the other interesting thing about China's decision was that they really gave some freedom to the banks to set their own deposit rates and their own lending rates, making the banking industry significantly more competitive than it was even just a couple weeks ago.
Okay, Scott. Well, guess what? That's all the time we've got for you.
All right.
And save the rest for the next show.
Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. If you think Holland Financial is just David Holland, think again. Hi there, this is David Holland, and I'm proud to tell you that over the last 15 years, I've worked hard to build a professional, qualified, and great financial team. Holland Financial has 13 dedicated employees, including 4 certified financial planners, 3 chartered financial consultants, and our own chartered financial analyst, and a fantastic support staff. So if you're looking for financial advice you can count on, call Holland Financial at 671-7526. That's 671-7526.
Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Bright House Channel 49.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I know I have been sharing and having guests on the program lately, and I've told you they're special, and I'm especially excited about our guest for today's program. You may have seen the Wall Street Journal article recently talking about Dan Ariely's new book, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, and we are very fortunate to have Dan on the program with us today. Dan, you there?
I am here. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm sorry. I don't mean to mispronounce your name.
Oh, that's okay. Everybody does. Don't worry about it.
Ariely.
Ariely. The main important thing is Dan.
Dan is good. Dan is one sharp, smart cookie, because Dan, you have really nailed this whole question of, well, you've hit several topics with your various books. And so let me let you give a little bit of background to our listeners. You know, we had you on our program about a year ago, and back then we were talking about your book, Predictably Irrational, and now you have a new book that's just been released, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty. So you're a researcher, you're an author, you are a professor at Duke University. So tell our listeners a little bit about you, and then we'll help them understand how you have solved some of the mystery about why we lie.
Very good. So my name is Dan Ariely, and I do research in what's called behavioral economics. And behavioral economics is a discipline that is concerned with economic decisions, but is not necessarily assuming that people are perfectly rational. So in the rational economic sense, people always make the right decisions. We always take everything into consideration. We think long-term, all kinds of stuff like that. And what we do in behavioral economics, which is a sub-discipline, is to actually put people in different situations and see how they behave. And because often when we actually put people in different situations, they don't behave as you would expect, it has also different prescriptions of what we should do. So if people are rational, it means we should kind of create certain mechanisms and behaviors. But if people are irrational, we should do different things. Now, what's interesting about irrationality is that it's not random. It's not as if some person does one thing, another person does another thing. It's really quite systematic, and we can create rules for how people actually behave under different situations. The thing is, it's just not the same as what rational theory would predict.
So that's what makes our irrationality predictable.
Yes, and you know, it's incredibly important to understand it, because if you think that we are perfectly rational, you would behave in a certain way. If you understand how people actually behave, you would do something differently.
What?
Now, it's really kind of amazing when you look at just regular life, there's lots of things that you see that are irrational, but nevertheless, it doesn't kind of penetrate our understanding usually, and we have to actually look more carefully to see the patterns of irrationality.
Well, you know, it's funny, as you describe it, I of course naturally think, being a financial planner, I think about the individuals I've tried to help over the years. I've helped a lot. I've helped hundreds of people get their retirement straight and right and get their money where it needs to be. But I have those people that now and then that just I think to myself, what's going on? I've given them a perfectly logical, rational solution to their situation, and they act weird.
Well, you know, financial planning is one of the toughest things to do from a rational perspective because, you know, why would you do it today, right? Why not tomorrow?
Right.
Taking on a particular act is something that is unpleasant and takes time and effort and attention. Why not do it tomorrow? And people are generally really bad about doing stuff that is in the long term. You know, financial planning is one of them. But, you know, if you try to be honest in this case and you say, how often have you overeaten and undersaved and under-exercised and texting while driving and having unprotected sex? And, you know, you think about all of those behaviors. It's not only that we've done them before. We also recognize that we will keep on doing them again. Now, with financial planning, you have to think really long into the future. Not natural, not easy, not pleasant. And on top of everything, if you do something for the long, your long-term benefit, you have to sacrifice something now. It is really unpleasant. So what do people do? They procrastinate, and they procrastinate, and they procrastinate until we get to a really difficult situation in which it's very hard to save for retirement.
And that is why, unfortunately, we see the frustration in the financial industry. And some there is this whole subset of financial services where it is the gamemanship or the pushing of emotional hot buttons to get people to act and not put things off till the distant future.
Yep. You know, I think that there's part of it is also the issue with the financial industry. So the financial industry, in my view, has really not helped people think very carefully about the future. So when we think about money, money is all about opportunity cost. Every time you spend money now, you'll not be able to spend it in the future. You buy a cup of coffee now, you'll not be able to buy something in the future. You buy a car now, you'll not be able to do something in the future. And I think this difficulty of thinking about money is really very hard, right? It's all about trade-off and very, very tough trade-off. And I think that to the large degree, the financial industry have not helped people actually understand what trade-offs that they're making and not help them think about them more carefully.
I agree. And I'm on my own personal mission. One at a time, I try to get people to understand these trade-offs that they need to understand, that they've got to do planning now to be able to have the kind of retirement they want down the road.
Yeah. You know, we a while ago, we did a study. We invited about 200 people who were looking for a house to come and look for a house online in our lab. And just we could see what they're doing, and we'd ask them questions from time to time. And, you know, what would people do? They went, they checked what is the maximum they can borrow, and then they looked at houses in those ranges. The reality is that's not what you want. What you want to understand, sure, how much you can borrow is an important constraint, but you really need to ask yourself what makes you happy. You need to ask yourself, what is the value of a third bedroom? And what is the value for you of being able to walk to a supermarket, to a coffee shop? And what's the value for you for having a place to park your car or a porch or all of those things? And then by understanding how valuable they are, thinking about how much you want to spend. So imagine that you can borrow up to $500,000. Maybe you can find a house that you can spend and you could like at $500. But maybe there's going to be a house at $400,000 that you would not like as much, but would give you money to go on vacations every year.
It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, you know, everything we do in money is a trade-off, and how do we help people think about those trade-offs?
Well, one way we're going to help them, Dr. Ariely, is they're going to be able to get your book. Now, they can go to your website, danariely.com. They can, I'm sure, go to other locations, good bookstores around the world. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. Dan Ariely talking with us about his new book, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, and also helping us understand how we make business, financial, life decisions. Stay tuned.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
We're back, and if you're just joining us, we have Dr. Dan Ariely on the line with us. Dr. Dan, you just got this all nailed. I can't tell you how much I enjoy your material, and there's so many things we could talk about. One of the things I think, since we're talking a little bit about the financial world, and again, Dr. Dan Ariely has a new book out, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty. And one of the areas, of course, that people are very aware of after we had the Bernie Madoff $50 billion scam is the whole issue of, you know, professionals and other people, the lies they tell or why they do that. And one of the things that you've identified is there's the potential for conflict of interest.
Yes. So this is a very, very difficult and painful situation, right? So you go to a dentist, you go to a lawyer, you go to an accountant, you go to a financial advisor, and we know these people and we like them and maybe we have coffee with them and we know their friends and we know them from a social circle. And not trusting those people is really, really tough because we know them. But what we find is that when people are put in situation of conflicts of interest, they have a very, very hard time seeing reality in a correct way. And here's one way to think about it. Imagine you're a fan of some team. Imagine that you like a particular sports team, and now you're in a game and the referee calls a call against your team. Ask yourself whether you could see things objectively or whether you're going to think the referee is evil, blind, stupid, something. And the reality is that we can't help it. The moment that we like a particular team, we see everything from the perspective of that team.
So it's these goggles that we put on our eyes that filter the truth to us.
Yes, and money is one of forms of goggles. It's not exactly being a fan of a team, but it's not too far from it. Imagine, I'll give you an extreme example. Imagine you're a banker, and you get paid $5 million bonus if you could only see mortgage-backed securities as a good product. Now, I'm not saying, would you lie? Would you be as evil to say, ha, 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 I think these are not good products, but I'll tell somebody else that they're good products? Wouldn't you truly start believing that they're a better product? And what if they were hard to evaluate and complex and there's lots of gray zones? And what if everybody around you, for the same reasons, believes that they're a good product? Under those conditions, we can behave quite badly without meaning to do so. So the danger is that you go to a dentist, a physician, a financial advisor, who in fact is a good person, has your best interest in mind, but they also get paid in a skewed way that skews their perspective. And now you can ask yourself whether they would truly be able to see reality in a correct way, or will they see it through their perspective of what they stand to gain, what they stand to lose. And I'll give an example, my personal example with a dentist. I've been very critical of lots of things in dentistry, and we've done some studies. We got 20 years of dental insurance. And what we saw was that as the duration of treatment between a particular dentist and a particular patient prolongs, there's more chances that the patient would get expensive, unneeded treatment. Why? Because the dentist gets paid much more if they treat people than if they don't. They get paid more for some treatment versus others. And as they go through the longer relationship, they feel more free to recommend things to the patients, and the patients feel more free to trust the dentist and take them on these suggestions. Now, I don't think dentists are evil, right? It's not people don't go into that. If you wanted to be evil, there are better professions to go and steal money from people. But nevertheless, they're dramatically colored by their conflicts of interest. So recently, I went to my dentist, and my dentist actually knows all my opinions, and we have lots of discussions. And he was out, and a woman that was in his office took me on. And turns out I had a cracked cavity. And she said that I need to replace it. Fine. She showed me like a little picture. I could see the crack. And then she said that she thinks that if we replace it with the white stuff, the porcelain approach, this would be much better than the amalgam, than the silver filling. This is the back of the tooth, so nobody could see anything. And from my reading of the dental literature, there's no evidence for what she was saying. Everything I read showed that the amalgam, that the silver filling, lasts longer, as in less likely to crack. So I asked her, is it better than the amalgam? She said, oh, yes, better. I said, is it more expensive? Yes, it's also more expensive, but it's much, much better. And then I said, when you said better, you mean that it's better than it used to be or better than the silver filling? She said, no, it's better than the silver filling. And then I said, can you show me any piece of evidence to this effect? Can you show me any paper? Because everything I've read showed the opposite. And she said, well, I can't show you any evidence, but trust me, it's better.
Oh, boy.
At that point, I didn't want to really trust her, and I said, you know what, I never want to see you again. But the reality is it's very hard when you're in an office with somebody that you know, luckily she hasn't been my dentist for a long time. She was just replacing for a day. But if she was my long-term dentist, it would have been very hard for me to tell her or him face-to-face, you know what, I don't trust you. But the reality is that we do need to protect ourselves against conflicts of interest because we could get all kinds of terrible treatment.
The honest truth about dishonesty, how we lie to everyone, especially ourselves. Dr. Dan Ariely is our guest on the program today, and he's got the website is danariely.com. We're going to take a quick break. Doctor, we'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us, this is one that you're going to want to go back to my website and listen to. Dr. Dan Ariely is on the line with us. The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, How We Lie to Everyone, Especially Ourselves. That's the name of the book. Author, professor of psychology, behavioral economics at Duke University. Dan, thank you for being on the program. I've got to ask you, this is just mesmerizing to me, I think. Here's one that I picked up on, and this was part of your Wall Street Journal article, that the amount of money to be gained and also the probability of being caught has no impact on the dishonesty or the probability of dishonesty.
That's right.
So that is amazing. Please share with us on that.
Yeah. Now, let me be clear. I think that, you know, in some cases,
okay,
of course, you know, if you're going to steal a car and there's a policeman standing next to the car, of course, nobody will steal the car.
Right.
But let me kind of describe our experiment in a simple way. So we take a sheet of paper with 20 simple math problems, and we tell people, solve as many of those as you can in 5 minutes. We'll give you a dollar per question. People solve as much as they can. After the 5 minutes, we say, stop, put your pencil down, count how many questions you got correctly. And now go back to the back of the room and shred your piece of paper, and then come back to me in the front of the room and tell me how many questions you got correctly. People do this. They come to the front of the room, and they say they solve 6 questions. Now, what they don't know is that we played with a shredder. So the shredder only shreds the sides of the page, but the main body of the page remains intact, and we can find out how many questions people really solve. And what we find is that, to a large degree, almost everybody, lots and lots of people, solve 4 and report 6. And we don't find that people cheat a lot. We find that lots of people cheat a little bit. Now, what about the things that we think influence cheating, like the probability of being caught or how much you stand to gain? We tried those out. We paid some people not a dollar per question, but 10 cents or 25 cents or 50 cents or a dollar or $2 or $5, even $10 per correct question. What happens? People don't cheat more. We see the same pattern when lots of people cheat just to the same degree, regardless of how much they stand to gain. The probability of being caught has the same thing.
That's amazing.
Now, here is the thing, right? It's not as if people don't cheat. People cheat. Lots of people cheat, but they cheat just a little bit. Now, what influences cheating? It's not the probability of being caught. It's not the amount to stand gain. The cheating that we find, now, you know, there's some psychopaths out there, but the cheating that we find with normal people is that it's all about rationalization. It's all about the ability of people to act badly, but think of themselves in good terms. So now, if you think that that's the main clue, then you say, ask yourself the main mechanism, what gets people to be able to rationalize cheating to a higher degree? So, for example, one of the things we find is that distance from money gets people to cheat more. There's a little joke, and the joke is that little Johnny comes home from school with a note from the teacher that said that little Johnny stole a pencil from the kid who's sitting next to him. And Johnny's father is furious. And he said, Johnny, I'm so embarrassed and humiliated. You never, never, never steal a pencil from the kid who's sitting next to you. And besides, Johnny, if you need something, if you need a pencil, you know very well you could just say something. You can just ask, and I will bring you dozens of pencils from work. Now, why is this slightly amusing? Because I think we all recognize that taking a pencil from work doesn't feel like cheating. Taking 10 cents from a petty cash box feels very differently, even if we take the 10 cents and buy a pencil. So in our experiments, The experiment I described to you in general, people come to the experiment and say, Mr. Experiment, I solved X problems, give me X dollars. In the other condition, they come to the experiment and say, Mr. Experimenter, I solved X problems, give me X tokens. And we pay them in pieces of plastic. They take this piece of plastic, they walk 12 feet to the side and change them for dollars. So when they look at somebody in the eye and they cheat for something that is one step removed from money. But that thing becomes money very quickly.
But what even happens, when they do that, though, that increases the amount of cheating.
Exactly. It doubled the cheating. And that, for me, is, by the way, one of the most frightening experiments we ever run. Because if being one step removed from money for a few seconds remove people from the moral shackles, what does it mean about longer duration? What does it mean about more steps? What does it mean about mortgage-backed security, stock options, backdating stock options, all kinds of things?
All these things that are further away from real cash money, on the barrelhead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. This is just, it's amazing. And I think that we all sit, scratch our heads, or a lot of us do, the 98% of the population, or 99% of the population, scratch our heads and say, why are they doing that? How can somebody like a Bernie Madoff do what he did? And he's just, since I talked to you last, which was a year ago, I wrote a book on how to get great advice and avoid scams, which I'm going to send to you for your hopefully gentle critique. And one of the things that I found is that, obviously Bernie Madoff is not alone. There's lots of different signs and indications of what may cause a scam and what may cause people to behave badly. But there are...
But, even when we think about Madoff, and I've been trying to talk to Madoff. I mean, he's in North Carolina, not too far from me, and I haven't been able to. But let me just speculate without knowing much. The fact that Madoff had no exit strategy... Right. If I was going to cheat $40 billion, wouldn't I kind of come up with a way? I mean, if you were a cold-hearted, calculated criminal, wouldn't you find a way to kind of have an exit strategy?
Why do you think he had one?
I don't think he had one because he got caught. His son committed suicide. I think there hasn't been too much thinking about the long-term endgame in that case, or at least not in a useful way.
So he got just numb to it, I guess?
We can speculate what happened, but... All the cheaters I've talked to, all of them had the same story. When they did, they started by just one step. This was not thinking about the long term.
Okay.
Even with Madoff, we can speculate, but do you think that when he started, he had an end game in mind? That he said, okay, I'm going to steal $20 billion and go away?
And then that's it? Yeah.
Or did he say, let me just do it for one time?
Right.
Because I need, but then it became too late and he had to think again and again and again. I suspect, people are generally not good in thinking long-term anyway, including criminals. So I suspect that it wasn't a long-term plan. I think it was short-term stupidity. And then once you start the slippery slope, sometimes, actually often, it's incredibly hard to stop. So I suspect that this is probably a better description of what happened with Madoff, which it's not to forgive him in any way, but it's only to say that it's likely that this could happen in other cases as well. You don't have to be a completely unique, twisted individual. You just have to be an individual who is willing to take one bad step in the wrong direction, and that could lead to a lot of devastation.
Well, that is something that we all need to understand. And speaking of stopping, you won't believe it, Dr. Arielli, but we're out of time. So thank you very, very much.
Fast.
Yeah, the website is danarielli.com. The book is The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, How We Lie to Everyone, Especially Ourselves. Thank you, Doctor.
My pleasure. Great talking to you again. Take care.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.